pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
We're back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Hour number three is now underway. Coming up, John Wall running for lieutenant governor, so please stay tuned for that. In the meantime, you want to text 251-343-0106. Trump's speaking right now. I've been trying to catch a little of that over the break, but he is... guess the word he is using, that Iran will pay the price for the stalling on these negotiations. So do you do this one by one? You start hitting these strategic targets one at a time? And then maybe they start to budge a little? And then, like, we got the bombers on the runway, and then we let them know. And then suddenly the deal is made and everything is fine, and then we're back to disturbances in the Strait of Hormuz, and we do this all. I don't know. But just giving you the news here, we're hearing it again, that Iran will pay the price. Also, Trump making some claims about inflation is going to decrease, and the plan, we will hit Iran hard again, quote unquote, today. So watching that close. Elections, we've been spending the first 2 hours on that. If you didn't catch up on that, we're still arguing about military service. May move on from that just out of spite. Unless you guys want to talk about it. But it's pushed out to a lot of us in the media. And I don't know what else there is to be said about it. You'll have to make up your own mind on that one. And there's a couple other races. Lieutenant governor race is looking pretty good right now. It's the least of the, I mean, that one was chippy for a moment, but I'm coming around on Wes Allen, even though he's not going to come on radio here. But we'll have John Wall on. I think he had two good candidates there. And then obviously attorney general is the one we're watching. We got ad commissioner race, and I need to look into that some more. Maybe that will be like a good, Monday or Friday topic. Corey Hill or Christine McInnes. Anybody? Hey, yeah, I'll just throw that out there. Like, anybody thinking about that? Some of you anti-marijuana folks might be. There's the rumblings that McInnes had some interest in some kind of marijuana business at one point or another, or some kind of ties to it, and that was an automatic disqualifier. Cannabis, I believe, is not, marijuana is not appropriate. Text line here. Old guy, was disingenuous of Jared Hudson. Dirty politician already. Moving along here. Mike writes a lot. Mike always writes a lot. Definition of scope, stolen valor refers to falsely claiming, exaggerating, or misrepresenting military service ranks, deployments, combat experience, or awards like medals that one did not earn. This includes civilians who never served, pretending to be veterans, actual veterans embellishing their record, claiming combat action they didn't see, elite unit service, or higher ranks awards. Barry Moore's misrepresentation over the past 6+ years fixed the definition to a T. Also, 1819 as an organization may not be pro-Moore, but your Birmingham lady disparaging Hudson is part of what causes 1819 to seem like it. And if you read the definition I sent you 30 minutes ago, we'll explain why Hudson won't blame Moore of embellishing, which Moore has done. That is the definition of stolen valor. April Marie Fogel, seriously, you're referring to. I find her to be at times kind of a leaning toward Hudson. It's that Birmingham thing. Killer Bees, actually, you do sell per boar. If you see the attack ads on Hudson receiving pack money, all while boar suffers, all while boar takes money from Israel. Americans are suffering because of the war. I don't, Killer Bees, I don't, maybe I sell per boar, but I'm not. Jared Hudson's been on my radio show more than Barry Moore has in the last 6 months. I did go to Washington, D.C. to interview Barry Moore, but I was just in town for a bunch of other business. But I'll say this about the attack ads. We don't get to see a lot of them in our market. There's a belief in the political consulting class that Mobile is kind of, it's already baked in. It's not really up for grabs. And where they're really spending money is in Birmingham. At least that's what I'm told. I'm not in the Birmingham market enough to know this. My mother lives in Birmingham or lives in Pelham. But that's where they're being inundated with these political ads. That's where a lot of this is really taking place, this sort of skirmish on the airwaves. But Tuesday can't get here soon enough. But we'll have a better idea of where we're headed. And then, guys, the fun begins because we'll have a couple of competitive, maybe four potentially, competitive congressional elections to get us through August. Through the middle of August, at least. August 11th. That's what is going to carry us through the summer, I suppose. Looking forward to that. That won't be as... There'll be less back and forth, I suspect. We'll have some clear favorites in those races. I think at least in AL1. I don't know about AL2. I don't know that district. I'm certainly intrigued by Austin Sidwell and Jerry Carl contest. I know there's some others on the ballot. What you want to be watching, I think, is AL7. You'll have a couple of Republican candidates there that are running. We'll have the runoff there, and then we'll have the election on November 4th. And that's a lot easier for a conservative talk show. To navigate. 251-343-0106. The other race that I guess need to draw attention to, we haven't spent a lot of time on it, and it's gotten really ugly. There's sort of a lot of Facebook chatter. Joe Freeman and Francis Hulk Jones. State House seat up for grabs, South Baldwin County. That's Foley and the Beaches. Really negative PAC ad from North Alabama PAC. I think that's a Steve Raby affiliated PAC. Going through divorce records and bankruptcies. I wonder what's going to happen down there. Will that drive up turnout in these statewide races? And there's not really, I think there may be one in Walker County. There's not a lot of other down ballot runoff action that we're watching. Obviously, there's the PSC race. But we'll time to catch up on that in the coming days. On a texter, I still just want somebody to ask Hudson how a bill goes from author to signed into law. Step by step, I honestly don't think he knows the legislative process or committees. I don't know about that. I give him more credit. I mean, he is a military veteran. He probably has a grasp of it. Now look, on a texter, our concept of the way things work in the textbook's definition of how a bill gets passed also really aren't the reality. They aren't. That you start at point A and you think it goes, gets submitted to whatever their version of legislative service, the congressional the services office or whatever. The bill's put out. They go through it in the committee hearings. They're very thorough. It gets passes out of committee, and it goes to the floor, and they deliberate on the floor about it. And then that chamber's done, and then the Senate goes through the similar problem. But that's not really – there's a lot of negotiating behind the scenes. There's a lot of backroom wheeling and dealing, and it's not as clean as maybe we think it is. Jason, see here. Good morning, Jeff. The Smokey the Bandit reference locked in my vote, referring to Jared Hudson. The Moore video where he portrays this as an attack of an Alabama National Guard is weak. Turn off. And it says, whether it's Moore or Hudson, what do you see in the future for the loser? I was telling Jared Hudson this, that like if he came up short, he really has a bright future ahead of him. I told him that personally. So I don't know what you got. I mean, I know you got your eyes focused on winning a U.S. Senate seat, but you performed exceptionally well. He introduced a kind of a new wrinkle to Alabama politics. And if it doesn't work out for him, I hope he stays in the game at least in some capacity. I don't know what that would be. I thought, you know, Congress maybe if Gary Palmer were to retire. But he sounds like, despite what that last texter said, Jason, he sounds like he's got a grasp of really what's going on. Like, he talked very intelligently about the skirmishes in the Middle East. Do you think Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has that kind of understanding of the dynamics? And all these members of Congress have their own forte. Mike, is there any news or young guy from Montgomery who is supposed to run at AL2? Are you talking about the guy? He's from Dothan, I believe. David Matthews. Not to be confused with the Dave Matthews of rock and roll fame. Named Texter yesterday, Corey Hill received the Eagle Forum national endorsement. It's unusual for Eagle Forum to comment on the ag race, but this one is important because of the need to stop the encroachment of the marijuana industry into Alabama government, even though Christina McGinnis' marijuana license is not yet active. She is definitely a part owner in the marijuana company called Flowerwood Cannabis. Well, and I appreciate that. Here's the problem. We have legalized medical cannabis in Alabama. We already fought this fight. The state of Alabama decided in 2019 that it would be readily available based on medical need. So I don't know that you can count that against somebody if they're doing it in the law. You may find it morally objectionable. It would be like saying, well, this guy owns a liquor store, I don't think we need, or this guy has gambling interests. Sure. That's all fair. But they're doing it within the law. It's hard for me to quibble with it on a big scale. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. It's FM Talk 106.5.
Have a good time. One day a wealthy customer bought the Indian maid. He took her home so far away.
Bayou Fasteners would like to thank those who placed themselves on the front lines to make our community safe. For giving up time with your families, working in difficult conditions, for giving up your weekends and holidays to serve and protect others. We remember it's the land of the free because of our break.
Then he cried just south of Nashville and he turned that car around.
He said, this is where you get off, boy, because I'm going back to Alabama. As I stepped out of that Cadillac, I said, mister, many thanks. He said, you don't have to call me mister. The whole world called me Hank. He said,
welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Wednesday morning, 251-343-0106. John Wall coming up in the next segment, so make sure you stay tuned for that. Tomorrow on the program, be joined by Jay Mitchell to lead things off, coming here to the Fairhope Bureau. So they'll be the, I believe, if I could get it up and running, the first guest in the new and improved Fairhope Bureau. Also on the program, Barry Moore will be calling in tomorrow. We'll get his response to all of this back and forth. And I'll give him the same questions I gave Jared today. I didn't get the opportunity to ask Monday night at the 1819 News debate. But you know what's coming. That will be on tomorrow's program. April Murray Fogle, as we do every Thursday. Never can have enough April Murray Fogle at FM Talk 106.5. And probably one more guest sometime in that 11 o'clock hour. Maybe another candidate if we can make it work out. In the meantime, your text message is 251-343-0106. Leo, simple answer to whether Barry Moore is a veteran. Did he serve 180 days or more in active duty status? No, he's not a veteran. I believe he checked that box. He completed boot camp and served, but a technical definition. This is where it got confusing to people, that Barry Moore, he signed up to be in the National Guard. He went through basic training. He remained in the National Guard, but enrolled at Auburn University. When he got to Auburn, he joined the ROTC. That's where the E6 classification came into play. But they conflated that with staff sergeant somewhere along the way. And that was very off-putting for a lot of people. Still, nonetheless, if we're looking at whether or not he's a veteran, then yes, he's a veteran. Did he embellish his service is the question. And Leo, I mean, I don't know what the deal breaker is for you or not, but that's my understanding. Mike, to figure out what Joey was talking about, consolidated power, I kind of don't like the idea of both senators being from the exact same small town in the Wiregrass. But they're very different. Any other time, yeah, maybe. Barry Moore and Katie Britt are very, very, very different. They, I mean, they're both Republican, and they probably vote the same way, but they don't, they don't run in the same circles, if you will, in Alabama politics. And now Katie Britt claims her home is Montgomery. So, I mean, yeah, I get it. And I've heard this from a lot of people. You know, where it's really a big issue about Barry Moore and Katie Britt being from the same place, have gone to the same high school. In Huntsville, it comes up. But I think other than that, other than having grown up in the same place, two very different sort of approaches and very different paths into power. Katie Britt, I remember press secretary for Senator Shelby, Katie Boyd, dealt with her when I was a much younger person as a reporter. She goes, comes back to Alabama, goes to law school, returns to Washington, D.C., eventually becomes chief of staff for Richard Shelby. And then, I guess it had to be about 2018 or so, maybe 2019, somewhere in that range, leaves Shelby's office to run the Business Council of Alabama, is the head of that. And then launches a U.S. Senate bid in 2021. Barry Moore, state lawmaker, takes time away from politics, beats a perjury charge from Matt Hart into Mike Hubbard saga. Is out of politics for 4 years, I think, from 18 to 22. No, I guess it would have been 16, 17, 22. I didn't make my dates right on that. Maybe 2 years. But runs for Congress, loses. runs again at 20 and wins. Very, very different pathways to where they are today. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Wednesday morning, 251-343-0106. We'll get to more of your texts later in the program if the time permits. Joining us now, he's a candidate for Lieutenant Governor. You got to know him over the years on the program as the Alabama Republican Party chairman, but since opted to run for higher office, John Wall joins us on the line. John, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to be on the show.
Hey, thanks for hopping on. Well, we'll start here. How's the campaign going?
Oh, you know, it's great. You know, running statewide for lieutenant governor, it's actually been a good experience. You know, state party chairman, I was out there all the time, you know, speaking to events, the grassroots supporters, and really enjoy the role of candidate because, you know, state party chairman, you kind of have to balance things, right? You're representing different sides of the Republican Party, different views. As a candidate, you get to speak for yourself. And I love that because I really get to be bold and talk about the values I really, you know, that I really care about. Things like reforming education, getting the woke trash out of our school system and out of our curriculum, returning control to parents and local teachers, tax cuts, phasing out the state income tax. You know, there's so many things, election integrity, you know, deporting criminal illegals. And one of the things I've been talking about a lot recently is the fact that, you know, as the U.S. Senate won't pass the SAVE Act, well, why are we waiting on the federal government anyway? Let's solve it at the state level. Let's pass a state state legislation that makes it where only U.S. citizens can register to vote. It's easy. We don't have to wait on the federal government. Let's get it done at the state level. Let's stop needing the federal government to solve our problems and start saving them, solving our problems right here on the state level.
I want to hit a few topics with you. I guess our first up, let's talk about this. Tell us a little bit about the, we haven't spent much time on AJ McCarron endorsement, getting that, that kind of came out of, nowhere, but, talk to us about that.
Well, look, you know, AJ McCarron, one, anyone who is a fan of football has got to respect his record, his sports record. Just an incredible athlete, you know, and watching him play for the University of Alabama and the Crimson Tide and then going on to play, you know, professional football. Got a lot of respect for him, you know, on that sporting front. But, you know, he was actually in the lieutenant governor's race for a while. And you know, talked a lot about it. I was actually impressed a few times I met him. He really had a heart for people. You know, young father, had a few, you know, has had small children. One of them has autism. And you know, he talked a lot to me about not, you know, government not caring about just average, everyday families. And he was like, if my family, you know, as a professional athlete and someone with my name recognition isn't getting cared about, I know that's the average Alabama family isn't either. And that really spoke to my heart. And so when he dropped out of the race, you know, that's when I started looking at running for lieutenant governor again. And really that's kind of sparked this. And we've kind of kept that friendship. But I think, you know, his endorsement of me speaks for itself. You know, he recognized my heart for the families of Alabama, for returning the focus of government back to the people where it belongs. And, you know, such a great football legend. I know he's from down in the Mobile area. So grateful to have his endorsement and be able to, you know, have him join the team as we fight for better government for the families of Alabama.
John, something else, and Representative Stringer and I talk about this at length on this program, but Big Creek Lake, and it's really what's going on here with the Mobile Area Water Sewer System and closing that down. And I guess I didn't really quite grasp it at first, but just generations have gone to that lake, and now suddenly it's shut off, and it seems like it was kind of done without a due process.
Well, I'm very familiar with that situation, and I am this kind of rolls right into what we were just talking about, right? Government should serve the people. Like, that's what our founding fathers envisioned, a government by the people and for the people. And when you've got an unelected bunch of bureaucrats you know, closing down public access to a public lake. Like, this is the people's lake. It's public property. They own it. And unelected government bureaucrats should not be shutting down their access. I'm a freedom fighter. I believe that the public should have access to their waterways. They should have access to public property. And I think this is absolutely a tragedy. And it's something that I will try to address day one if elected lieutenant governor, because that lake should be open for the citizens. They should have access to the enjoyment of it, whether it's fishing, whether it's boating, whether it's whatever it may be. That lake should be reopened for the citizens of Mobile County and any citizens visiting from across the state.
Well, and so is it just a matter, if you're lieutenant governor, just having that role and that outspoken ability to promote something to open it back up?
No, I think there's a couple key things here, because, you know, the water authority in Mobile County does not actually own the lake. So the lake is under the state conservation department, if my memory or similar, if my memory serves me correct. But it's state, not county. And so the authority here is at the state level. And they've given, you know, they've kind of given that authority over to the water authority. And I think that's where the state can make a difference. And someone in the lieutenant governor's office can absolutely go in there and talk and find ways to return control to the people. I think this is something that can absolutely be done through that office.
Let's talk about this, something else. We didn't get to spend a lot of time on a debate Monday night. Tax policy, and you hear this a lot. Governor-elect, let's say, Tuberville has talked about it. But doing away with the state income tax and making progress on that, you know, we're behind other states. Obviously, Tennessee and Florida don't have state income taxes. Mississippi is looking at rolling theirs back. How does Alabama get on that bandwagon?
Well, I think we need to be on it day one. You know, this is something that I've been a long time advocate for. It was on, as state party chairman, it was on our legislative agenda in both 2024 and 2025, talking about reducing the state income tax. And I think we're at a point right now where Alabama should lead the nation. I'm tired of watching our state be behind the curve when it comes to conservative policies. I want to see Alabama leading the charge when it comes to conservative principles that defend the rights and the freedoms of every single individual and cut taxes on the people. So look, this is very possible. Florida doesn't have a state income tax. Tennessee doesn't have a state income tax. Mississippi's phasing theirs out. Georgia's phasing theirs out. And if we don't get started on this, we're going to be behind the curve, and it's going to put us at an economic disadvantage nationally. And so I think this is both an item and a priority that would give the citizens of Alabama immediate tax relief, but it's also going to help the state recruit more industry, more jobs, and build our economy. So this is a win-win. There's no reason not to start this process. We can do it. Other states have, and there's no reason for Alabama to not get started.
Well, then where do you make up the funding, or is it feasible that you could cut enough from government to compensate? I mean, where does the state's still got to be funded? Where do you make up that revenue?
Well, look, there are three areas, and this is not going to be a fast project. This is going to take years. And I think that's why we need to get started. But I think you immediately take any surpluses you have, and you put that towards cutting the income tax. You also look at cutting wasteful spending in our current departments and agencies. Like, there's not a single government department that doesn't have some waste. And I have been a longtime advocate for setting up an Alabama Department of DOGE, looking at every single area of government and cutting where we can. And that can all be moved also towards cutting the state income tax. And then I think the final one is there are going to be some revenue neutral increases in other areas. We'll probably have to raise the sales tax, some other use taxes. And that will need to take effect, like I said, over several years. I see this as probably a 6 to 8 year project.
That's how it's going in other states, it seems. It's just you're not going to wake up one morning, the legislature's going to have acted, and you no longer have to pay income taxes. But if somebody pays just wrote a check to the state of Alabama for my quarterly taxes. It adds up to be a lot more than one would think, I think.
Well, and you look, here's the thing about it. You want to do it in a responsible manner, right? Because anytime you're talking about a major policy shift or the way the state is funded, you don't want to make drastic decisions that can have knee-jerk reactions. You want to take the time to do it right, be fiscally responsible, and work with all the stakeholders in the process. And so that's why I think it would be a project that would take years. But it's absolutely something that's feasible. Look at how many other states across the country don't have a state income tax. We can do it. And I'll tell you right now, I was down, I was invited by Don Jr. to down to a World Economic Summit back a couple months ago. And one of the people I met there that I met just before in passing was Kevin O'Leary, from Shark Tank. And I was asking him, what are the best things the state can do to grow their economy? And he looked at me and the first thing he said was, does your state have a state income tax? And I was like, yes. And he was like, well, I wouldn't even consider moving there. He said, there's enough states that don't have an income tax that I don't even consider starting a business or moving a business to a state that has an income tax. And that really impressed upon my mind the need for this. We're losing economic opportunities immediately just on that one thing that we currently have.
Well, so then here's the question. I guess you talked about, you'd have to have higher sales taxes. We're in the middle of winding down the grocery tax. We have decided that it is, morally objectionable to tax food. But, where would you make it up then? What kind of taxes, where would we seek? We already have in this state very, very low property taxes relative to the rest of the country. Do you look at that even?
No, I am definitely not a fan of raising property tax. In fact, I think we should cap the spikes in property tax. It's outrageous, the spikes every year. Look, I know there's some people who are going to say, oh, this is a pipe dream or whatever. But look, let's look at other states. I'm going to give you an example. The state of Tennessee doesn't have a state income tax or a state property tax. There are other ways to increase revenue. And I think once this process starts and the economy starts growing, because when you cut taxes, when you return money to the economy through the people and through small business, that leaves more money to grow and there's more tax revenue generated. And I think over time, that's the goal. For us to build an economic engine where we start producing more, where we start spending more, where we start having more, our citizens have more money. And so we build a stronger economy that then helps fund government more. And so I think that's the end goal, is to create a system where the government can be funded without the level of taxation. There are definitely going to have to be replacements. And I think the two areas you're going to see are use taxes, which are consumption type taxes on products or goods that people use, and then a sales tax increase. But this model has worked in other states. There's no reason it cannot work in Alabama.
Well, this is, and I asked you this at the debate Monday night, but I mean, from the standpoint of being lieutenant governor, it's an important office, but it's an office that doesn't necessarily play a bigger, a giant role in public policy relative to the other offices in the state. How do you do it from that perch?
Look at what I've been able to accomplish as state party chairman. I worked hard on good policy. Policy has been one of my main priorities. Things like constitutional carry, school choice, making vaccine passports illegal, curriculum transparency for our parents in our education system. Reducing the grocery tax was one of the party's priority legislation. I think the lieutenant governor has an incredible opportunity because they are the bridge between the executive branch and the legislative branch. And if you have a good idea, if you have a vision, you sell it. You sell it to those other elected officials. The people are going to be behind this. And I think that's what you need, are leaders who aren't worried about using the power of their position to beat people over the heads. You're looking for leaders who can inspire people to make the state better. I think that's what I want to do as lieutenant governor. This is not about power. This is about helping people have a better life. You mentioned Tommy Tuberville having talked about it. Having been in lockstep with the governor on an issue like this is also incredibly important, that he has someone who will back him, and that will will support his efforts in the legislature. So I think this is a winning issue. The people want it. It would be good for our economy, and we just have to communicate that in a way that brings the rest of the leaders in Montgomery along with us.
Well, and last question, and this is what the texters are saying from Matt and Gary, and they talk about Tennessee, and they talk about Florida. Those are states that have a lottery. I don't think a lottery will bring in enough revenue to really do much there. $500 million a year at most is what the projections say, but is there credence to the argument that a lottery would help get us to where you want to be?
Yeah, look, I'm not in support of lottery. I'll tell you why. It's just another tax. And I'm a small government constitutional conservative, right? And so I don't necessarily want to see government grow. And I think a lottery, you know, just increases the size and scope of government. You know, it also, you know, has some potential moral applications. I will say that if our state ever did implement a lottery, any true conservative should be pushing for that, for the lottery to be the revenue from it to go to cutting taxes in other areas, because that way at least it doesn't grow the size of government.
John, we got to get out of here. How can folks find out more about your campaign?
Oh, we'd love to stay connected. We're on all major social media. I'm John Wall for Lieutenant Governor, and then our website is votejohnwall.com.
John, appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Good to be on the show.
John Wall, ladies and gentlemen, running for Lieutenant Governor. We'll be right back. It's FM Talk 106.5.
One day, Papa called me to his dying bed, put his hands on my shoulder, then in tears he said, Patches, I'm depending on your son to pull the family through. My son, it's all left up to you.
I can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person cold. But I can't say the same for me. I've done it many times.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on what's left of this Wednesday morning. Tomorrow, we'll kick the show off with Jay Mitchell, candidate for Attorney General, on the program here at the Faro Bureau. Also, Barry Moore, congressman for the 1st Congressional District, running for United States Senate. April Murray Fogle, and one more guest to be named later. A couple of texts here. I have noticed my timberland near my property is ridiculously low property tax compared to my pasture land. Seems unfair for commercial timber property to pay such a low tax. So the forestry is very good at what they do. So maybe that's something to do with it, at least in the government affairs arena. Thanks to having Travis Johnson on yesterday. He's an electric speaker and such a great person. And then Ben writes, I'm so tired of hearing politicians from the lottery as a tax, as an excuse. They are for it. It's voluntary, unlike the actual taxes we are forced to pay currently. I would have approached it different. I would say, well, the lottery is an expansion of government. And, you know, I'm the thing I would be about the lottery, I'm just skeptical of how much actual revenue that's going to bring into the state and how it is administered. Coming up here shortly, Midday Mobile. Sean, what you got?
Hey, Jeff. In just a few minutes here, my buddy Cameron Smith joins us. We'll talk about all kind of things. The Nancy Mace story there is this part, you know, the trend, the people that were associated with pushing to get the Epstein files out. They seem to be losing elections, or at least in some cases not running. We'll talk about that. In addition to, like you mentioned, I guess we're back on. So we're not cease firing anymore for Iran?
I don't know. That sounds like the president's talking very, very everything with him is part of the deal. So I don't know what reality is.
But you were confused like me, right, by ceasefire. I'm like, do we need a new definition for ceasefire? Is it like
ceasefire light?
Yeah, it's like ceasefire today. During the ceasefire, the Iranians shot this many, launched this many missiles and drones, and then the United States did this. I'm like, that doesn't, it's not what the kids say, it's not giving ceasefire to me.
It's like when you tell your child to do something and he kind of does it anyway, but tries to find some kind of technical definition. Well, I'm not really jumping on the couch anymore. I'm just hopping.
That's perfect. We should put that meme up. Here's how the ceasefire is gone. Quit jumping on the couch. I'm not jumping. I'm just moving up and down.
Yeah, it's how it is at our house, which, you know, fatherhood is it's learning along the way here. But they're I guess they're like me, trying to figure out some loophole.
I have my kids do the same thing. Smart kids, it's a good thing. So that's going to happen. Erica Thomas is going to join me. And in hour number two, it's back. It is the World Championship Turkey Calling Contest coming back to Mobile. I guess it's done for the last, I think, 4 years now, 5 years. So Kenny and Kenneth Weiss will join me to talk more about that in the 1 o'clock hour. That and a whole lot more on the way in Midday Mobile.
All right. We all need to stay tuned for Midday Mobile coming up here shortly. I got to get out of here. My time is up. I will try to do better tomorrow. Couldn't do much worse. So make sure you tune in. Sorry, Phyllis. I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.